an accurate statement of the department's position?
I think it would, number one, address the problem that we have in the statute today in federal district court, and secondly, if you would include B felonies, it would open the door to a constitutional attack on it, I believe.
Fine, that was, I raised that question pursuant to the Senator Ray's proposed amendment. Are there any other questions for Mr. Stern?
Yes.
Senator Ray.
Class A felony, are there any Class A felonies that are not abuses of the person, of the individual himself? Are there white collar crimes under Class A felony?
The only conceivable white collar crime would be arson of property when someone is actually in danger. It could be arson to defraud someone, but I'd have to say that other than with that exception, and I don't even think that's an exception, they're all person crimes involving death or serious physical injury.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Stern? Thank you, Mr. Stern. Next, I'd like to call Jim Sterling from the Anchorage Police Department. Ms. Sterling, would you please join us?
Introduce myself. My name is James Sterling. I represent the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. And we are in favor of 545.
What has your experience been, Mr. Sterling, with the number of convicted offenders on the street, on appeal, committing a second offense? You probably run into it perhaps more than anybody else, but certainly statistically you're more inclined to.
It does happen. One case that does come to mind is there was a person in Anchorage who was convicted of sexual assault first degree, released pending sentencing, and committed the same offense again. The release entailed bail on a third party, and it was just a case where he was not watched close enough and the offense did occur again.
Are there any questions for Mr. Sterling from the members of the committee? No questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Sterling.
Thank you.
Senator Ray, you had a proposed amendment you wished to leave the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we strike or a Class B felony.
Is there any objection to that amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion by members of the committee with regard to this bill? This is an important part of the Senate's justice package this year. Do I hear a motion to move the bill from committee?
Motion to move the bill from committee and individual recommendations.
Motion been made. I am a with individual recommendations that may not be necessary. I am a do pass. Is that right? Do pass. Okay, would you change your motion to a do pass, Senator? Since we have
pass. Do pass.
No objection. No rec.
And no rec. Okay, that would be still be a do pass recommendation with no rec. Very good. The motion has been made. If there's no objection to that motion, the bill passes from committee with a do pass recommendation. Next, I'd like to bring up Senate Bill 547 and Senate Bill 485. Both bills deal with the videotaping of the testimony of victims of sexual assault. Both bills are somewhat different. Perhaps the first I'd like to do is ask Mr. Bruce to point out some of the. Okay. If you could just briefly note some of the differences. Senator Park?
I would like to pass out to committee members this sheet of paper, which is the Florida statute on the subject and from which the original bill instruction here was patterned. Okay. The 485 bill was patterned initially after the Thank you, sir.
Mr. Bruce, could you briefly denote the difference between the two bills?
Well, generally, the bills are the same in substance, other than Senate Bill 545 has an additional section which would provide for the exclusion of the public from the trial during the testimony of a young victim of sexual assault or sexual abuse. And so it has rather two purposes, as opposed to Senate Bill 485, which is limited to the videotaping of the testimony.
Great. With that as a matter of Senate courtesy, I'd like to have Senator Bradley join us and give us some remarks with regard to his bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if I may just take a minute of your time. I had secondhand information of one minor from a very good friend, and then I witnessed personally another instance where a 14-year-old girl up in the Palmer area had been raped, and in the presence of the public, she was hysterical to the point that she didn't understand a lot of the terms associated with the sexual assault. And as a result, the public defender said that I think it's best that we don't take this thing any further. We let the individual, although he was indicted on two counts of first degree felony assault, let him plead guilty to a minor offense. So plea bargaining entered into the situation. And he is now serving 30 days. And evidence was brought out, and a lot wasn't brought out in the court, but was admitted to friends and whatnot later, that he'd assaulted several other babysitters that never reported it. As you know, many of these aren't reported because of the embarrassment of it all. And I've never seen a child more distressed and distraught and hysterical in my life. It was a lost case if she had to go to court and face all those people and the embarrassment. So I was impressed at that time, and so the parents impressed further on me that something needed to be done. So I went to see Brother Barry, and we drafted up this bill. And the big difference in it and Senator Parr's is it's a little more detail involved and a little more was extracted from other states' bills, but essentially the same, and you can see the differences. On line 23, the fourth word in that line to the right, from left to right, from there down through line 28 is added. On the second page, line 2 through 4 is added. And on line 2 also, line 8 through the rest of the page, through the third page, line 4, which includes on the second and third page the exclusion of the public, in addition to videotaping, where you may not have videotaping, but you still have exclusion of the public. And they're the major differences in the two bills, without repeating what's already been said and what you probably already know from the previous bill. In other states, as you see there, from Florida, Massachusetts, and New Mexico, they have related type bills.
Senator Ray.
Well, I have a question on this. Let's take a hypothetical question. The child is 8 years old, highly emotional, and if you were going to take her into a place and put her on a videotape, and you were going to exclude her parent or guardian, who could be an anchor, it seems to me that you would be defeating your purpose as well. So, and I see that the public means all persons except the judge, the members of the jury, the defendant, and his counsel, and counsel for the state. Oh, here it is. I was on a fine. I'm sorry. I see it's covered under six there. That's good. I thought we ended here on this page, and now it's done. That's, somebody tore my building apart.
I'll make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yes, sir. Apologize to the committee for taking up your time.
Senator Bradley?
Mr. Chairman, you'd have problems no matter what if you had someone 8 years of age, I think. What I detected in this instance, the one that I had personal observation of, was although the parent was trying to explain what ejaculation and semen and those words meant, the girl was so upset, she just wasn't listening. Of course, you had someone 8 years of age, of course, you couldn't even explain the definition of those terms, but it's a help anyway, you figure it's better than what we have. You're likely to have a much better case and a conviction excluding the public than you would if the public is present. Less embarrassment, I think. Frank, it's a good bill. It's better than what we currently have, which is nothing similar.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ray.
Did we find out the technical label of minor? Was a minor 16 years of age and younger?
16 younger.
Is that a minor?
Please, Mr. Chair.
In this bill, you're saying it's 16 at the time of the sexual assault. Some provisions in the law require 18, some 19. It's all up to the board. The reason it's 16 here, though, is because the crimes in the criminal code against children are committed against people that are 16 years of age or younger, unless it's a forcible sexual assault.
There wouldn't be any technical defect is what I'm looking at. I have no problem with the age itself. All I'm looking at is a technical defect.
No, you can pick the age, any age you want, Bill.
Are there other questions for Senator Bradley? If there are no other questions, thank you very much for joining us, Senator Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Parr, did you wish to make any comments? Your bill is also
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, if I might, give a very brief disquisition as to what happened here. When I was chairing House Judiciary Committee, we had hearings around the state on the whole criminal justice system. And this problem was brought to our attention in Nome, as best I remember, by someone who spoke to the committee. And so when we came back to the 1980 session, there was a House Judiciary Committee bill drafted and introduced, which did pass the House, as best I remember, and then did not pass the Senate that year. And so then last year, I reintroduced the bill in the Senate, and this is reintroduced in the form in which it had passed the House, as best I recall. Now, we did not deal with the problem of excluding witnesses. I'm sure that's, in many cases, a good idea. It depends, I think it's much more, it's a different issue than that of videotaping, let's put it that way. And I always have a certain amount of difficulty with excluding the public from any trial. I think the standard need to exclude the public from any trial should be far greater than the standard required for videotaping. After all, one of the reasons we have public trials in this country is because we had people who wrote the United States Constitution had very sad experience with secret trials of people in Europe, in the countries they had come from. And this can be a very dangerous thing to allow too many trials of the public being admitted. So I simply think that the need standards should be different for the two issues, trial and videotaping.
Senator Ray?
Of course, I'm going to speak from an individual, not as a senator. And, Just make a comment. I think that if in certain of the cases, or perhaps in the majority of the cases of rape, sexual assault, if we allowed the videotaping for all victims when it became necessary or requested, there'd be considerably more convictions, and there would be considerably more charges brought against rapists. And it's the I don't know if any of the people saw the television program the other night, Victims. That was a pretty stirring thing about some of the reactions, some of the burden that a woman goes through when she is a victim of a That's just my own personal view.
I agree to Senator Ray. You and I have served in the Senate together for going on years now, and I remember when we first worked together on this problem. We changed the then current law in 1975, trying to get to the same end. I'd like to call next Mr. Stern again to the chair. Mr. Stern, could you comment on the question of excluding the public from trial and any difficulties that you think that might cause?
Well, when you're talking about excluding the public, you're up against the constitutional provision on public trials. But this issue is up before the United States Supreme Court at this time in a case called Globe Newspapers. It's a Massachusetts case, and under the Massachusetts statute, exclusion of the public is automatic in a rape case. You don't have to make any findings. That was attacked, saying it violated the constitutional right of the public to the trial. And the Supreme Court of Massachusetts said no, it was constitutional because of the competing interest of the victim and society's interest in the rape prosecution. And when that case is decided, we'll probably have a better idea of how far we can go. I think that the bill is drafted as to excluding the public from the trial. I think would probably sustain constitutional muster in that it's not an automatic exclusion. It's up to the court to make certain findings. But on that vein, I'd like to just point out a number of problems with that, if I might.
Please do.
I should also note that Vic Crum, who's the Assistant Attorney General in the division that's really in charge of our efforts to prosecute sexual assaults vigorously this as a result of appropriation last session, has been working on this bill, and as a matter of fact, he's been meeting and sitting with the police departments and other DAs throughout the state who do primary rape prosecution, and they have a number of comments that they've relayed to me. And when Vic is back, if the bill is still in this committee, he'd be happy to work further with your staff on it. But let me just point out a couple of problems, conceivable problems.
I would like to move the bill along. I don't want it to cool in committee.
So. Okay, well, let me point out some difficulties that the committee should consider. We certainly support the idea of allowing the videotaping and excluding the public, but there is one problem that has been raised, and that is with the videotaping section, the court has to make a finding that there's going to be substantial likelihood that the child will suffer severe emotional distress required to testify in open court at the trial. Well, what does that mean in terms of how do you establish that? Does that require a hearing where the child is subject to examination by the defense attorney to establish the extreme emotional distress? Would it require examination by a psychiatrist prior to a testimony with examination of expert witness at the hearing? The suggestion that Vic has come up with, and a number of other attorneys agree with, and I certainly agree with, is that with videotaping, it should be automatic, that there should not have to be a finding by the judge that extreme emotional distress will result, because if we do require that, we may be requiring the child to go through the same type of embarrassing type of court session is this tries to prevent. It may not be that there would be a jury there, but I think similar considerations would arise. One other minor problem with the bill is the fact that it refers to the age of the victim at the time of the sexual assault. I think this should be at the time of the testimony, that we're concerned about the age of the victim at the time of the testimony. In other words, you may have a sexual assault on a person that is, say, 15 years old, because of delays in the trial and whatever, may not be having any testimony until the victim is 17. In terms of defending the statute, I think we would be better off if we looked at the age and time of the testimony. There is an Alaska Supreme Court case called Storrs that restricts the right to use videotaping of witnesses. In this case, it was a videotaping of a doctor, I believe, or psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist had to be in Hawaii, so there was a videotape made and the deposition, and the court said that was improper. That would not suffice. We think, though, when you're dealing with the sexual assault, that other considerations would apply. But I think our case would be stronger if it was the age of, at the testimonies as opposed to the sexual assault. One other thing is that the statute is drafted only applies to the crimes of sexual assault and sexual abuse of a minor. In addition, there are crimes of incest and contributing to the delinquency of a minor, where sexual penetration or sexual contact may be involved. And instead of adding to the list, you could refer to any crime where sexual penetration or sexual contact is an element to deal with that. One other thing that the bill might consider is allowing this procedure for testimony on the part of a witness to the assault. And the example that was given is the situation where it's a young witness, a 8-year-old, 10-year-old who witnesses a sexual assault on the victim, and the witness has to testify. Certainly the main emphasis here is the victim itself, but the you may consider expanding it to witnesses. I think there's definitely a typo on the presumption in Senator Bradley's bill, lines 23 through 28, in talking about, yeah, okay, that's currently already been noted. The typo refers to, on line 27, it refers to at the time the application for an order excluding the public is considered. And we're not talking here about excluding the public, we're talking about videotaping, and Senator Bradley's language would change that to for an order allowing videotaping is considered. But to that very issue, we would recommend that the presumption be totally eliminated, that videotaping be allowed just on motion of the prosecuting attorney. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. I don't have any draft language, but I think we can work up some language pretty quickly.
Senator Ray, I still have to come back to the point of the, I'm not all that familiar with the operation of the juvenile court, but I do know that there have been some victims of crimes mm-hmm. perpetrated by children or minors 17 years of age or under. And these people cannot even find out who these people are, and yet we're having an argument about videotaping it in a sexual crime. So I think that the probability is there that there must be a precedent, or there must be some way that this can be done without the argument Mr. Stern brought up. I think that 16 years of age, at the time of testimony is a good idea, but how is it that somebody goes out in the valley and robs a house, and they rob my house in the valley, I can't even find out who it is?
Let me respond. Senator Ray, there's a bill that I have passed out to my colleagues that we introduced shortly to deal with the problem. We've talked about that last year, and in response to your concern and citizen concern, we have drafted a bill that would allow the victim of a crime to know the right of disposition of a juvenile. And I would certainly enjoy having you as a co-sponsor. That the material should be on your desk now. Mm-hmm. And
I was just responding to your problem with the 16-year-old.
Sure. There's a statutory problem in that area also, and we hope to correct that this year. Senator Parr.
Mr. Chairman, I might respond to one thing Mr. Stern said in the members' packets on SB 485. There was a memo from me as chairman of the HES committee to you on that bill. And the second point that recommended the Judiciary Committee consider was adding to the offenses which videotaping is permissible in incest and sexual exploitation of a minor. So we did, the HES committee did not change the bill, but recommended the Judiciary consider the very thing Mr. Stern is talking about. There was also, I noticed, a possibility of doing away with the 16-year-old limit, either raising it to 18 or making it for anybody, and then also a priority in court calendar. There's possible suggestions for me.
Now, is it my understanding that, say, a minor, a 12-year-old girl, and they videotape her testimony, then during the trial, I mean, the defendant could be there during the testimony and ask questions and that, but do you show the videotape to the jury and they use that, and is the minor excluded then, or is it from being present while this is shown or anything? I mean,
the way
she never appears in court or anything else, is that it?
She would not have to appear in court. She would not. She could be in the courtroom, but she would not have to appear in court. The videotape would be played back to the jury and the public.
No, what I mean is, there's no requirement that she has to sit there. And
oh no, not at all.
All right.
Not at all. And the examination on the videotape would be as if it was in court.
Well, what I was getting at is the constitutional problem faced by your accuser, and I guess that's taken care of during the videotaping. The accused and the
well, there. I think that there is an issue as to whether it addresses the constitutional problem, and certainly in this case that I refer to, in the Alaska Supreme Court case. When it was not a sexual assault case involving a young victim, and the young victim was testifying, the court said it did violate the Constitution. I think in this situation, the competing interest of the victim and society here would outweigh the right of confrontation or the right to have it in the courtroom.
I'm just trying to see that we don't get hung up with another technicality.
Senator Barr?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Mr. Stern one question. When he spoke about the possibility of videotaping a witness, isn't that, shall we say, more subject to constitutional attack than the videotaping of the victim, or is there no difference?
I would think it would be, sir. In terms of our strongest argument, it's going to be when it's the victim, the witness. It's going to make it a little tougher.
Yes, it would.
One question, Mr. Stern, then Senator Ray. Would it be your suggestion that certain portions of we're dealing with several different sections or different questions, would it be your suggestion that possibly they be split up so that they might be addressed should someone challenge them and the statute not fall altogether?
You mean
in terms of structure?
A severability clause?
Yes.
Or I think there's a general severability clause in the Alaska statutes in Title I, but I would recommend that you would have separate sections for the videotaping and excluding the public.
Okay, I would, at the time we get, obviously we'll be doing some drafting work, I'd like to discuss that with you just as a matter of ensuring that we do the best drafting job. We don't obviously want any problems should this be reviewed by a court.
Sure, I also apologize for all these points that I've raised. It's just it is a relatively new issue as to videotaping, and with these people meeting this week in Sitka, they've had a good opportunity to really go over the bill and raise these issues. So
we appreciate it. We want to do the best possible job.
Well,
Senator Ray.
What about the problem that they give the initial testimony and then during the trial, new evidence is uncovered in the. And the defendant's attorney says, well, we'd like to re-question the victim. Are you going to videotape session again or what?
Well, that's certainly not addressed in the bill. I would certainly say that that would be the appropriate way to go about it, to videotape at the time.
You're going to get a pretty involved process along here pretty soon.
That's a difficult thing for you to respond to. Let me respond by saying that if we try and write all that into the statute, yeah. we'll end up tying the hands of the prosecuting yeah. attorney. We're better to leave that decision to the presiding judge, or rather the trial judge. Senator Bradley.
Mr. Chairman, I asked the same question of several attorneys over in our legal services division, and they gave the same answer that you gave. You know, it would be assumed that it would be videotaped again if it was the first time, because it's a simple circumstance. Same victim in the same case. If I may add at this time, Mr. Chairman, in regard to the age and whether it should be videotaped, concerning the age at the time of the assault or the time of the trial, I also had them to research as to whether any state had any priority for criminal cases involving sexual assault, and that sexual assault cases might have some priority, and that the victim would suffer more distress and anxiety waiting for that time, you know, that it would take place. California has such a law, but it wasn't appropriate to put in this bill. It was recommended that it be put in another bill, that there are priorities established, and one instance is California in sexual assault, sexual abuse cases, because there's less prolonged emotional stress and whatnot waiting for that trial. Get it over with quick, in other words. So I think, in my opinion, and
I'd like to talk with the court system on the priority of calendaring. We have found ourselves in disagreement over certain portions of calendaring, and obviously they, as a separate branch of government, have control over that. We want to do what will be the fastest, and rather not try to impose something upon them that might cause us problems. But I think we all agree with the concept, and I'd like to talk with Mr. Snowden about how that might be accomplished most expeditiously. Mr. Stern, did you have a comment?
No.
Okay. If there are no further questions from Mr. Stern, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Mr. Sterling back. Sterling, I believe you also wish to testify on this bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So far as the bill is concerned, the Agri Police Department Employees Association is definitely behind the bill 100%. We believe that in our contact with the people that are the victims, that they are emotionally distressed from the word go, and it just compounds the distressness of the victim. We do have a further comment which I would like permission to expound upon.
Sure.
We feel that although there may be constitutional problems, because neither any of us are constitutional lawyers, we would like the committee not to forget the middle-aged housewife victim of a sexual assault, or in fact the male victim, of which we've had a recent case in Anchorage of. And it's been my personal experience, having been the officer who's had to have first contact with a person in her late 20s who was the victim. At first, she was so rocked by it, she just didn't forget it. And there is an emotional problem with the older person as well, and it may have just as much stress factor upon them as it does the younger child, depending on their conditions, which I agree have to be looked at each time. But that is the association's feeling, that we would like this also to be looked at.
But it's a point well taken, obviously, one that Senator Ray spoke to earlier. Are there any questions for Sterling? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Sterling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have several other people who signed up. I presume they wish to testify. Next, I'd like to call Deborah Jean Keller.
Yes, I'm Deborah Keller, and I'm here representing myself. I'm a parent of a child who was sexually abused here in June of this year. And in watching my child being questioned by a person everywhere and having to watch while it was happening, it was very difficult for her just to talk to that one person and to answer the questions and to tell what had happened to her with the use of dolls. I have a very small child. And in addressing one point in the bill where you would have the person who had done the attacking in the courtroom at the time that the videotaping was taking place, if I understand the bill correctly, I would suggest that the person who was the attacker not be there because the child would be so frightened they would not say anything. And this is just from being a mother and going through it myself. And I also like to address what Senator Ray brought up earlier as being a victim also of domestic violence myself. Having been raped in Anchorage, I did not go through the process of prosecuting the person because of having to go through the court system. So that's something that I feel that is really needed. Because it hurts, even when you're as old as we are, to keep telling the story over and over and having it jammed down inside.
Thank you very much. Senator Ray.
Mr. Chairman, I can understand what she says about the minor, but unless I'm wrong, and please correct me if I am, but the accused has the constitutional right to be faced by his accuser. I don't know how you would eliminate them from this. It, although there is the problem that you brought up, and it's a very, very straightforward problem, but I don't know how you would...
It's a very difficult one to deal with. Mr. Stern, would you care to comment very, very briefly on that?
I'm just not aware of any instance where the defendant has been excluded from the testimony of a victim. I don't think we can get around that.
Next, I have several people signed up. If there is someone that didn't wish to testify, but just signed up on the sheet, please let me know. Nina Kinney?
I'll let John Keith.
Okay. John, you're next on the list anyway.
I'll be short and sweet because Senator Parr as well as Barry handled most of ours. I'm John Pugh from the Department of Health and Social Services, and we have testified before the HESC committee before in support of Senate Bill 547 as well as Senate Bill 485. We think that both of them have provisions that are very important. We have indicated that we prefer 547 because of the actual expansion to the elimination of the public from the courtroom, despite the factors mentioned by Senator Parr. We feel that it would be helpful in terms of prosecutions and certainly be helpful to the individuals that we work with who are sexually abused. We also made recommendations last year and continue to on the addition of incest and sexual exploitation, which again Senator Parr mentioned earlier in the recommendation from HESC committee. We feel that the way it's presently constructed, those may well be excluded, and we think they should be included in the bill. The final recommendation that we'd make, I'm not clear on this in the bill, it looks like there's no delineation of who can be present at the videotaping, and it seems to me in the construction, there is a delineation of who can be in the courtroom when the public's excluded, but there's not a delineation of who can be in the room when the videotaping takes place. It does indicate the judge, it indicates, of course, the defendant and his attorney, but the question would come up, what about parents, what other individuals are allowed at the videotape? And it seems to me those are important because, as mentioned earlier in testimony, I think it's important that at least parents be available when the child is, if the videotaping is taking place. And so I think that kind of thing should be delineated in the statute.
Are there any questions for Mr. Pugh?
Mr. Chairman, yes, perhaps a question, since I don't know anything about courtroom procedure. Can the, when it says that the trial judge shall preside at the videotaping and shall rule on all questions as if at trial, isn't it within the prerogative of the judge to decide, to some extent at least, who will be present? I just don't know.
Yes. You know, again, that the answer is a little unclear, Barry. Is that the best way, perhaps, to state the current?
I guess my question
Yes, probably something can be done, but the parameters of it are somewhat unclear.
What I'm driving at is, wouldn't the judge be able to decide in this videotaping, according to this bill, whether or not the parents would be present?
The language of the bill, of course, allows...
both of the bills have the same wording there, I think. If the order is granted, yes, the trial judge shall preside at the videotaping proceeding and shall rule on all questions at the trial. And I don't know, but I would think that would give him the right, the authority to let the parents present. That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
I guess my question would be that where it came from our point of view, is it also would give him the right to exclude, and I think there may be some real difficulty in that from the viewpoint of a small child, that in terms of excluding parent, or possibility of even including someone else who may have been the counsel in the case or whatever else that can provide that kind of support to help in the prosecution.
Mr. Rick?
I don't know. I'm not a judge, and I don't know if they would do this, but it would seem to me that it would be to carry out the intent of the act. You could have the defendant and the parents and all of this, and the judge and they could go through the testimony of the minor and get it all out. But if you're going to stop that kid with objections and the counsel's going to object to what they're saying, you're going to have the same dramatic effect. The kid's going to go up in the air anyway. What I would think is if you're going to get the testimony, what happened is have them tell, and then after you've got that on tape, then you show it with the defendant, and the defendant's counsel can raise the questions and the point, and then you can question the individual on those types. But in order to get the true story out, if you keep interrupting that kid all the time, you're not going to get any story at all out of him.
Of course, it's within the discretion of the judge to allow testimony.
Could I refer that question to the lieutenant? Do you understand what I mean, Lieutenant?
Sure.
I understand what you mean. On a personal level, I would agree with what you're saying, but I don't know. I think there would be a conflict between on the videotaping and then going back without the questions being asked about the defense counsel being present.
He could be present and all that, Barry, is what I'm getting at, is that if they let the kid tell it, and then after he once got it on tape, and then if he wants to refer to certain instances or certain questions, bring it up there, and I think the kid would be more composed. But if you're going out on the initial statement of the child, and they're in a traumatic state anyway, and you interrupt it, would be a fine defense mechanism to interrupt them right at the start and harangue them from the very first, and the kid would forget half the story. Yeah. I suppose it's the best thing just to do the best we can, and I know that it'll be probably the first one or two that they try it on, there'll be some problems with it, and then whatever problems that arise out of that, then we can face them as they come up, I suppose.
Certainly, defense counsel will look for any way to to attack the statute, so it's our job to make it as good as we can. Senator Bradley?
Mr. Chairman, to regress back to a statement that Mr. Pugh made concerning the videotaping and the parents being present. Of course, there's no videotaping in the one that I had personal observation of, but it must be the prerogative of the judge, I would say, to permit the parent, in this instance, to console the individual and even have explained some of the terms that she didn't understand. So I think the judge has that prerogative without having to put it in law. Maybe you know, I don't know. At least that's what was done.
Thank you, Mr. Pugh. Next, I'd like to call Sarah Felix.
Hi. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Felix, and I work as the attorney for the Aware Shelter and Rape Relief Center here in Juneau. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault regarding Senate Bills 547 and 485. I have a position paper here that I prepared on the bills, and I'll just give six copies of it to you to hand out. The Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is a nonprofit corporation composed of 17 domestic violence, sexual assault, and adult crisis intervention programs throughout the state. Network programs are funded in part through grants and contracts awarded by the recently established Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault in the Department of Public Safety. Network programs have had extensive experience dealing with the issue of sexual assault. Programs are usually contacted directly by the victim after an assault, and program counselors and advocates participate in the entire reporting and judicial process. Additionally, some programs have established court monitoring programs in order to evaluate both judges' sentencing practices and convictions by This is kind of long. Do you mind if I read this?
If you wish, if whatever is your preference.
Well, I'm just going to read it then because I think it's pretty relevant. The network supports the purpose and principle of Senate Bill 547 to protect young victims of sexual assault or sexual abuse of a minor from the emotional distress of repeated or public testimony regarding the crime committed against her or him for the following reasons. Legislation of this kind protects the young victim of sexual assault from having to repeatedly relive the experience of the sexual assault. It protects the victim from suffering the initial feelings of shock experienced after the assault, and it generally mitigates the increased suffering from rape trauma syndrome, which occurs as a result of the telling and retelling of the story of the assault. And this kind of legislation makes the criminal proceedings less of a public humiliation and ordeal for the victim.
Ms. Hood, can I interrupt you? You're reading the handout that everybody has.
Right.
I wasn't aware of that. If it would be agreeable with you, we could insert that in the record. Each member will have a chance to look at this as we do the committee substitute copy of the bill.
Okay. I would like to raise some specific areas requiring further legislative attention orally, if you don't mind.
We'd like that very much.
Okay. As the previous people who have testified have said, the crime of incest, Alaska Statute 1141-450, which is a Class C felony, isn't included in either the videotaping or the exclusion of the public sections of the bill, and we'd like to see that in the bill. Incest victims are often children, and they should be afforded the same protection as the other victims. And again, the age of the child at the time of the assault is listed as the standard for exclusion of the public or for videotaping in both bills. And we would like to see the standard being the age of the victim at the time of testimony, and that the age be 18 rather than 16, since 18 is the age of majority in the state. And the network would like to see a definition of severe emotional distress since this is sort of an amorphous concept, and we would be happy to work with committee staff to develop such a definition if you desired. Also, the presumption in section 1245-47A2 and 1245-48A2 in Senate Bill 547 seems like it's a bit much, and we're sort of worried that that would make the bill more likely to suffer a constitutional attack. So we were suggesting that maybe it would be in the judge's discretion rather than having a presumption. And then the same concern that Barry Stern raised about the language in 547 on page 1 on line 27 and 28 is something that we were raising, but apparently that's a drafting error and it's been addressed. The network would still like to suggest that the following persons be present during the videotaping and trial, and that's the judge, the defendant and counsel, counsel for the state, and advocate for the child. An advocate for the child would mean a victim witness assistance person, an attorney, or a rape crisis center staff person. Parents or guardian of the child, and the court personnel essential for taking the testimony.
Senator Barr.
Is that an exclusive list? All inclusive or what?
Yeah.
The reason I asked the question, you left out jury, and yet you say both the videotaping and the trial. Now, you can't exclude the jury during the trial, can you, very well?
Oh, of course not. Mm-hmm. I hope that was a drafting error on my part.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Barr. And the issue of severability that's already been raised is one that we're very interested in, because the bills might be attacked, and if they were constitutionally attacked, it would be desirable that just the provisions that were attacked fail and the rest of the bill would remain standing. And regarding section 1245-48, exclusion of the public, subsection B on line 25, we would like to expand the definition of the public to include the advocate for the child, as I just stated earlier. We believe that it's especially important for child victims of sexual assault to have emotional support throughout the criminal proceedings, and their advocates from rape crisis centers or victim witness assistance programs who have worked with them throughout the crisis should be present during the proceedings. And this is very important in incest situations, where the non-offending parent is often suffering from such a tremendous personal stress and trauma that they might be unable to adequately support their child through the proceedings. And one final concern expressed within the network is about over the disposition of a videotape after it's made. And we suggest that to mitigate the invasion of privacy the victim suffers, that the tape be transcribed into a written record and be later destroyed after the defendant has exhausted the appeals process, or that the tape be ordered sealed by the judge. And these comments apply to SB 547 and 545, and the only difference is that, 485, the only difference is that 485 doesn't have a section on excluding the public from the trial.
Senator Barr.
One question, Mr. Chairman, if I might. When you talk about this support person, you said advocate for the child, et cetera, and the people who are present.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about an ad litem?
It could be a guardian ad litem. What I'm specifically talking about is what the network has in mind, is the people who work in our programs, because we have so many rape victims coming to us first, and so many child sexual assault victims coming to us first, and we work with them, you know, before trial, before they even go to the police, and we work with them throughout the whole process. And we were just hoping that if the child so desired, that support person could be present for them. And I realize it's not real technical and legal to have an advocate from a rape crisis center present, so there might be some problem with that.
Chairman, that was, I guess part of my question is how such a person would be chosen, and what would be, you know, the prerequisites, whether it be up to a child who might be 8 years old to choose, or up to the parents and guardian, or up to the court, or how that decision would be made, and know whether you're going to require special expertise on the part of that person. or some official standing with the court. You see, this raises a whole
can of worms.
Whole series of issues there.
Yeah.
Senator Ray?
I think that that would, if you get into a position like that, you're going to get into severe attacks of constitutionality.
Right.
I would think that possibly where the support person would come in is during the trial, and you could appear as a witness for the prosecution, et cetera, and that would be your function at that time. Otherwise,
the defendant will want his support person.
Well, he would want, you know, the pastor of the local church or somebody there, and the next thing, pretty soon you got an open trial again, and you really defeat the purpose. But I think that, I don't quarrel with the idea, but I think that your place is in the is in the actual trial proceedings, and where you could be called as expert witnesses or affirmative witnesses for the prosecution.
Are there other questions for Ms. Kinney?
No, thank you.
Okay.
I did have this article, if you any of you were interested in, from the National Law Journal on the Globe case. If any of you were interested in that, on excluding people from the public from the trial. If you'd want to make a copy of it, I just have one, so.
We appreciate that very much, Mr. Bruce.
And the network would just like to thank all of the sponsors for these bills for putting this kind of legislation through. This has been a concern of ours for years, and the network people have worked with Senator Parr over on the first videotape bills, and we just think that it's wonderful that you're doing this, and we're very happy.
Thank you very much. Obviously, we will have to prepare a committee substitute. There's a great deal of work to be done. What I would like to do is have Mr. Bruce work with the Department of Law and provide us with a first draft dealing with about 8 problems that have been identified, and provide us some language for perusal. Obviously, we want to do it as correctly, as technically correct as possible, because we in all probability do expect it to be challenged in court at probably the first opportunity.
Could you, Mr. Chairman, while you're exploring that approach, I wonder if you could also look at the idea of the testimony as a pure and simple part of the trial itself, and just take the direct testimony from the child, and then during the trial proceedings, and they can ask additional questions or whatever it is. But I mean, to get to the basic statement from the child as to what happened, and if the attorneys want to argue over the points, do you understand?
Yes, we'll explore that. Maybe that question might
eliminate a lot of the constitutionality problems too.
Great, Senator Barr.
Because you will be facing, you know.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say one thing. I'd like to say it very carefully. I hope so it won't be misunderstood. The original intent of this bill, when it was first introduced in 1980, was to reduce the trauma on a juvenile victim of sexual assault. And it was limited to that purpose. It didn't have any other purpose except that. There is, and I've noticed it not only at this hearing so much, but at almost any hearing when you deal with the subject of rape or sexual assault, sort of an unspoken presumption that the person who's accused is always guilty. Well, unfortunately, we've had numbers of cases in which people have been accused wrongly, in which they've been accused by, I mean, deliberately. Sometimes it's, you know, the victim remembers a face wrong. There have been cases when people were simply accused with deliberate intent to cause them trouble when they weren't really guilty in the first place. We've had people go to jail and get out later. And so I think that we have to bear in mind that constitutional presumption of innocence, the right to confront one's accuser, and not have this unspoken assumption that the person who's accused is always guilty of this crime. And the only purpose of the bill was to reduce the trauma on the child, nothing else at all, period. It didn't change any of the other balancing act that goes on in criminal justice.
And that, if
You're more or less going along the same line I am. In other words, just get the basic testimony and then let them argue it out with the rest of the time.
Well, thanks, Senator. Well, we best bear that in mind because that is, of course, the Constitution of the United States. If they're, Senator Bradley?
Mr. Chairman, as a concluding remark, I have two other bills. I worked with STAR quite a bit this summer. And they're reviewing one of the bills I have on my desk now. The other one's been reviewed, but I'm still nitpicking it a little bit. That takes up a couple of points that were mentioned by STAR here in their testimony. I don't know how much you can put in one bill and how much you would prefer to, but I think in view of the fact that we've been one to number three in the nation on this, so really a black mark for the state per capita, and that 62% of the people don't report them, and I've forgotten, I couldn't find that note before coming down, how many divorces result of those married people have been divorced and so on. Something has to be done, and I just hope we can get a bill out reasonably quick, and maybe we can supplement that and improve on it in time to come with successive bills or successive sessions.
It's the chair's intention to move this extremely rapidly. It's an important part of the Senate's justice package this year, and it will come out of here just as fast as humanly possible.
All right, if I may add one thing, Debbie reminded me it's 96% of the married people that are already men in divorce. I knew it was a high number, but
if there's nothing else will come before the committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee stands adjourned.
And only 2% are rehabilitatable of hardcore rapists. They're the hardest criminals to rehabilitate.
Patrick?